Following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, True Wealth, presented by Little John Financial Services. Here are David Littlejohn and Katie Shook with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
So you know what's fun about having pre-recorded stuff is that David is not here. You are getting an all-female financial show today, which is a lot of fun. So this is your host, Katie Shook. We're here on the True Wealth Radio Show, your favorite day of the week, Tuesdays at 4 o'clock. I have special guests in studio with me. I have Miss
Heather Mock
and
Tracy Grubbs.
All right. And we are going to be talking real estate today. So Tracy is a local realtor in our area. And a good friend of mine from church. And I wanted to talk about real estate because real estate is something that is important to your financial future. Most people either want to purchase a home, own a home, maybe are looking at a home. and we also talk about real estate as part of your investment holdings too as well. So we're going to be talking real estate today, which will be a lot of fun. And Heather, who I brought in. So Heather is actually new to our team at Little John Financial Services. She joined us at the end of October. So she's our newbie. So she's going to be helping ask some really fun real estate questions. And Heather, I discussed with you a little bit earlier. Tell our listeners why I thought it would be important for you to be on the show today.
Because I am a first-time home buyer. So I have some questions that probably everybody else has as well.
There you go. So Heather's actually in the middle of a real estate deal.
Yes, we've had some bad luck, so hopefully this time is the winner because we've been through it a few times.
So maybe Heather will share some do's and don'ts on what she's learned as a buyer, but Tracy, I bet, can definitely guide from the pro side of it what to do and what not to do when looking for a home. So Tracy, why don't you give the listeners a little bit of background about yourself?
Sure. So I have been a licensed realtor for 10 years this year. My husband Brian and I sell real estate together, and we've been doing that for about 4 years now together as a team. We're also on the G team that I'm hopeful a lot of you out there have heard of already and seen our signs out and about. The G team consists of three couples, the Grahams, Grubbs, and Gillespies.
Hence the name, the G team.
Correct. Yes. We couldn't come up with anything more clever than G team, so it stuck. So yeah. we're the G's.
So if you want to get into real estate, you better have a last name with a G in order to be part of the G team.
If you want to work with the G team, you got to have a G name.
See, I'm automatically out right there as a Shook. It just, you know, it's not a G and S, it's just the G team.
We've had a few people want to change their last name.
Ah, there you go. Yeah. Can we just add a G to the beginning of it, right? We'll just create a new one. It'll work out. It'll be fine.
Yes.
So, and how long has the G team been a team?
Actually, 7 years.
Wow.
This year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you said 10 years. So this is nice, right? A little bit of it, a decade long. That's can be a long time for realtors. I've noticed that people get into real estate because they think it's easy.
Oh, yes.
And I bet you would share something otherwise.
It's definitely a common misconception. Some parts of real estate can be easy, but overall there is so much more to this job that is not readily apparent or easily seen by someone outside of the field. There are so many different hats that you wear and different responsibilities that you have in representing your client that it can be a very stressful and difficult job at times, but also extremely rewarding.
Right. So give our listeners a little bit as a realtor, what are some of the values of reasons why people should work with a realtor?
Protection.
That's an interesting one. Explain that a little bit more. Protection. Okay.
So making sure that you have someone who is looking out for your best interest. A realtor has knowledge of the paperwork that's necessary for purchasing a home. They know the ins and outs of lending, how to read a title report, different things to watch out for, home inspectors to use to find out conditions of homes. So it's really overall about protection, making sure that you get every bit of information that you would need in making a purchase.
So one of the things we say a lot on the radio show is you don't know what you don't know. right? Yes. Like you, and I know that you have to think about that for a second. You don't know what you don't know. I would tell you that doing anything for the first time can be very scary and very daunting. And if you can have a professional by your side, I feel like that's the best way to go. I know in the financial world, when David and I host a show, we talk a lot about, you know, if you're a DIY person. But in order to be a DIY person, you really have to hone your skill. And at that point, if you're going to do it yourself, you might as well get the license anyway. Like, I feel like if you know that much information, you might as well hang your hat on that hook, right? Yes. And then go for the licensing. And I know that there's a couple different levels of licensing, mm-hmm. right? There's a broker and a realtor. Do you want to kind of talk a little bit about that or explain the difference between the two?
Sure. When you're first licensed, you're licensed as a real estate broker, and you have to get 3 years of experience and a certain number of transactions and take some additional education to become a principal broker. So most of us operate as a real estate broker. Whatever company you work for, there would be a supervising broker in place to supervise your paperwork and transactions. So a lot of agents don't feel the need to become principal brokers. But that is the next level. To be a principal broker, I am recently a licensed principal broker myself.
Oh, it allows
you. Thank you. It was quite the deal to go through my education and take my test again, as you do have to complete another 150 hours of education and then take another state and national test. So put myself through that again this year.
Well, and that tells you right there, right? You've just talked about having a decade's worth of experience, and yet going back to get your principal brokers still took some education, still took some more training and more learning and things that you might not use necessarily on a daily basis, but information that, you know, standards want you to have, right? Like the licensing board wants you to have. They want to make sure that if you are supervising other people, that you really know what you're talking about to make sure that that supervision is done correctly.
Definitely.
So, and that's something that's important. So even though realtors in general are independent contractors, most of them still have somebody that's kind of supervising them too, unless if they are the supervisor.
Correct. So right. Depending on the company you're with will dictate whether or not you are a supervising broker of yourself or someone else, or if there's another supervising broker designated to supervise you.
Oh, there you go. And you can actually do, the supervisor a lot of times still sells real estate also.
That's correct.
So it's not like they're just the boss. Like they go out and actually have listings.
Correct.
And, yeah.
Competing broker is what we like to call that.
Ah, there you go. So now are you the principal broker then over the G team, or are there other principal broker licenses in the G team?
I'm not the only principal broker in the G team. And fortunately, I don't have to act as a supervising broker within our team. The G team is associated and brokered by EXP Realty.
Okay.
And they provide us a supervising broker. So I fortunately don't have to take that role with myself or anyone else on my team. But if that became necessary someday, I would have the license to do so.
There you go. And sometimes it's just the education, right? It's kind of just better honing your skill and your craft, just making sure that, you know, like I like to learn just to learn. Like I kind of like to fuss with things and just to have more knowledge about it, right?
Definitely.
Because I feel like people turn to us at our firm and stuff, and my friends will turn to me and say, hey, you know, what do you think about this? Now, I have to be careful about it because I'm not a licensed financial advisor, so I can't give financial advice. And if it starts to get into stuff where it requires financial advice, then I refer them to the advisors in our office. But people will say, you know, oh, you work for Little John Financial Services. You must know about these things. And so I'm assuming people kind of stop you and go, oh, Tracy, I have this real estate question. Right. And does that seem to happen quite often?
Oh, yes. All the time. And as long as it's real estate, we're good. But we often venture into the legal aspect of things, which I can't give legal advice. And so.
Right. Right. And that's you guys, it's where it gets tricky. It's not that Tracy doesn't understand a thing or two about it, but it's again, it's what the licensing allows us to do and what it allows us not to do. Mm-hmm. Right. And a lot of it is for the consumer protection. Right. They want to make sure that the consumer is protected to make sure that they have their rights in place. So but thank you. And so EXP is kind of a new thing on the scene. Like I've noticed them that the title of it starting to pop up a little bit more as a real estate office, but it's a very interesting concept. EXP is As I've mentioned before on the show, my husband also sells real estate too as well. And so we've looked at the eXp, and because they've acknowledged that people are going more and more online for real estate, right? They're shopping online. I mean, Heather, is that something that...
Zillow's my best friend.
So. Now, I have a love-hate relationship with Zillow.
I'm cringing.
Okay, so Heather, why do you like Zillow? What is it about Zillow that you go to, or what information do you get that you can't seem to find anywhere else?
Well, Realtor.com was another one too, but for some reason I just keep going back to Zillow. I feel like it's slightly easier, and it sends me the email reminders when something new pops up in my price range. So,
all right, now you said you're cringing. Talk a little bit about why for Zillow.
Well, I also have a love-hate relationship with Zillow. So I would say my experience is that Zillow is an information giant. That is the whole premise behind Zillow, is that they want to provide more information than any other website out there regarding real estate, and they've been successful in doing that. What I would say is that it's not always accurate information.
There you go. And that's something that's really important, right? Whether you are looking for homes to buy or trying to figure out what you think your home is worth, you know, data moves so quickly. And we talk about the ebbs and flows even of the stock market, but I know that the real estate market's the same way, right? Like from month to month, houses either can be a little more valuable or a little less, depending on what the market trend is at the moment. And so Zillow may not be the most current and accurate information, but it gives you a ballpark. So like, I always kind of look at it like, oh, if I'm getting close, right? If I want the fine tuning, then I'd go to a realtor. But if I, as a starting point, it's probably okay.
Definitely. Okay. I mean, I even use that in my kind of triangle of putting together a prospective listing price on a property. It's one avenue that I will look at to see what is Zillow saying the value of the property is, because I know my potential client has looked to see what Zillow is saying their house is worth. But it's definitely not my official, this is what the house is worth source.
Right.
Zillow has not been in your home, is comparing your home to other properties that are nearby that could be nothing like your home. So there's really a lot of room for error in either direction.
Right. Well, because Zillow's basing it on square footage and tax information.
Hard data only.
Right. Like they're not, like you said, they're not looking at the condition of your home. They're not looking at, you know, whether or not you just completely remodeled it or if it's a little bit of a fixer-upper, right? And so they're not taking those things into consideration. And those can fluctuate in the thousands of dollars, or sometimes even five or ten thousands of dollars, depending on the condition of your property that you're trying to sell. And I shouldn't say your home. Home makes it sound very personal, but people have property that they're trying to sell, even as rentals and other pieces of property that they've inherited too. So like you said, it's a good jumping off spot. We're about to come up on our break in just a minute, but Heather, you had a question about Zillow that I thought was a really fascinating question when we were doing some research for this show. So let's do this. Let's take a break. This is a good spot to stop. And we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about Zillow and answer those questions. You have Katie Shook,
Heather Mock,
Tracy Grubbs,
and you're listening to the True Wealth Radio Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, and we're back. See, it's such a short break. I was trying to warn the girls, but, you know, it always, when you've never been on the radio show before, it's a little scary and I think and a little nerve-wracking to go, oh, everybody's listening to me. Although, I think it's one of those things when you have to give a big speech, I always just think that there's only five of you listening out there, even though I really know that's not the truth. But it helps me, I guess, mentally to not be nervous about it. So as we went into the break, we were talking to Tracy Grubbs from the G Team here and also Heather Mock. We were talking about Zillow. And Heather had a great question. Heather, what was your question about Zillow?
I often see pre-foreclosure, and I was told I can't try to buy one of those houses. So what exactly is a pre-foreclosure, and what's the process with it?
Sure, that's definitely a common question. One of those things that Zillow opts to show in their quest for obtaining and sharing as much information as possible.
Well, and it's obtaining and sharing eyeballs, right? I mean, that's kind of like the little dangling hook out there. It's like, oh, yes, it's in pre-foreclosure. This might come up next. And now you're paying attention to their website a little bit more.
Yes, definitely. So, and when you see the word foreclosure, it definitely piques your interest as you're thinking this could be a good deal. With pre-foreclosures, typically the case is that Zillow has been watching notice of defaults or missed payments, and they're able to reflect a pre-foreclosure, or if a bank has filed foreclosure proceedings on a property, they will reflect that on their website. Unfortunately, it does not mean that it's available for sale, and oftentimes they will post the default amount as if it were a list price, which is very deceiving.
Yeah, because if the house, for example, was worth $200, but they only owed $150 on their thing, then it would say the default price is $150 when that's actually not the value of the home.
Correct.
That's shady a little bit.
Yes. So typically what I tell my clients looking at a pre-foreclosure is to just dismiss it, move on, watch for other properties that are truly available for sale. It can take quite a long time in some instances for the bank to actually foreclose on a property, take possession of the property, and depending on the type of loan that was on the property, they often have to wait another 6 months before they can list the property for sale on the open market.
No way. How come it's such a long delay to get all the loan stuff cleared up?
Yes. So depending on the type of loan, there's some regulation in there that restricts the bank from doing so. It's giving the previous property owner actually more time to redeem themselves on their default amount.
Now, if a property owner finds themselves unable to make their mortgage payments, right? So the house is no longer an asset. It becomes a liability in that respect. And instead of just losing it to foreclosure, they can short sale, right?
You can short sale.
Now, can you explain what a short sale is?
Yes. Short sale is a property that is worth less than what is currently owed against it in a mortgage. So if the property is worth $200,000 and you owe $250,000, to sell that property and get your mortgage lien holder to release it would be a short sale. So meaning short the...
You're shorting the bank, money that they are owed that you promised you would pay that you're unable to pay at this moment. But it's not as bad as a foreclosure, if I remember right. Like at least, you know, the goal for the bank is to try to find a new buyer who will then pay the mortgage. And like you just said, if they actually foreclose on the property, well, then they're not getting any income for 6 months and sometimes up to a year, depending on how many of those they have in their records and when they can turn them over. And sometimes when people are really unhappy and losing their home to a bank, they don't always leave it in the best of care. So sometimes banks actually have to hire people to go in and clean it up and get it ready to be available on the market again, right? So it's not just the simple fact of, oh, we foreclosed and now it's time, but sometimes the house itself is not ready to be available.
Correct.
For loans, right? And so that can also be tricky too. So a bank understands a little bit of its balance sheet on that, right? And how to handle it, hopefully. But yeah, those are interesting aspects on it. So that was really helpful about the pre-foreclosure, because I hadn't really heard of that and I didn't know much about that. But I know, like I said, as you've been searching for a home, that you were kind of keeping an eye on those. And so that would make sense why they told you it wasn't really available.
Yes. So those foreclosures, when you see actual foreclosures for sale, they 99% of the time will be listed by a realtor who is in partnership with those banks to list those homes when they're available. So fortunately, most foreclosures will become available with an agent, which allows you to make an easier purchase and allow you to have a realtor represent you in that purchase.
So nice.
Yeah.
So how does a foreclosure, so if we're talking about, you know, you're on Zillow and you're looking at what you think your home is worth, how does a foreclosure in your area affect your home value?
I'm not sure how Zillow really takes into an account a foreclosure in the area. I don't know if they have a formula that, you know, removes those from your value or not, but in a standard appraisal, in a typical arm's length transaction, an appraiser would not be looking at a foreclosure as the same.
Because it wasn't a house that sold, right? Like, they're not looking at the sale value when they're trying to figure out if your house is worth the value that the contract is under.
Oh, you're saying for the amount that the bank has taken the property back for, the default amount, rather than what someone has purchased a foreclosure for.
I'm just thinking, like, if I let me rephrase my question. Maybe I didn't phrase it correctly. So if I'm purchasing a home in the area and I'm looking for comps, would that foreclosure come up in the comp? Like, would it affect what, I shouldn't say if I'm looking to buy, maybe if I'm looking to sell my home, how would that foreclosure affect my sales price? Like, does it negatively affect it? Would my house be worth less, or is it due?
Just by having a foreclosure.
Just by having a foreclosure close by. I mean, is it something that I'm like, well, buyers don't really pay attention to that because, again, it's a default situation, right? It wasn't a sale at that price. Those kinds of things, or even a short sale, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if somebody's desperate to get out of their loan, how does, do you see that really affecting the market or not really much?
Not really much, because an appraiser is going to look at a short sale or foreclosure as an under market sale, under market value.
Okay. And what is the high market right now, or like, what is the hot market? What are people looking for right now, and in what price range?
So they're looking for a 3-bedroom, 2-bath with a 2-car garage with a nice lot and yard, typically within the Roseburg area, and at a price range between 200 to 300 typically. And those homes typically go pretty quickly once they're listed around here. The other desirable type of property we see is the same thing, but on a couple of acres of usable ground or some privacy. We have a lot of retirees here that are looking for that type of property.
Oh, there you go. So see, you could be sitting on money and not even know it.
Yeah.
Well, I know when Thomas and I first bought our home, because we have exactly what you have described. We have a 3-bed, 2-bath, and we sit on a quarter of an acre. Right. So not super big, but maintainable yards, especially if someone doesn't want a lot to maintain. But I know when we purchased our home, we thought this would make a good rental because it was something that was starter home related. And part of the reason we bought it is we knew that our mortgage was less than what we could rent it for. So we knew that that would be a great stepping stone for us in our financial future and in our investing in real estate. And Heather, I know you kind of had the same idea. What city are you purchasing in right now?
Right now it's Winston.
And why Winston?
Because every house in my price range is taken by the time I find it.
So you've kind of seen the cutthroat a little bit of what happens in the real estate market. Do you want to share your personal experience a little bit?
You have to be quick. As soon as you find one, act on it. I've had a couple backup offers, and then I end up actually getting the chance to get them. But that's at the same time that my first offer is going through. So I've had some bad luck with choosing the wrong ones.
Timing, huh?
Yes. Timing is a big deal, especially right now. But thankfully, every time something's fallen through, there seems to be new houses popping up in my price range, but then those go super fast as well. So timing's a big issue right now.
And you are kind of what Tracy's been describing, right? Kind of looking for a little bit of that 3-bed, 2-bath, starter home-ish.
I want to rent out like your plan. So I wanted to keep it on the lower price range. So right now we're starting with 2-bedroom, 1-bath. And then our next home will move up from there.
There you go. So I was talking to a friend of mine the other day who was buying her first home. And, she was so nervous about it, and I think her parents kind of spooked her a little bit. And they said, you're securing yourself down. you know, you're tying yourself down for the next 30 years. And I said, first of all, let's talk about real estate for a second, because A, you can always turn around and sell it again, right? Now, obviously, if it's really close to when you bought it, there's transaction fees and you may not walk away with a whole lot, if any. But I said, you can always sell it. You can always rent it. Like, there's always other options. It's not like this is going to be your forever home. And I think that trend has also changed a lot. Like, I remember when, you know, my grandparents, like, it's like we bought a house and we lived in it forever and everybody kind of died in the house and then moved on, right? And now I don't think people are keeping their homes as long. Have you noticed a trend shift at all, Tracy, in like what people are looking for or how long they're keeping their homes?
Definitely, especially in the area with younger families who are looking to get into the real estate market, are purchasing entry-level homes, living in them for 2 to 5 years, working on fixing them up, selling them, and upgrading to the next property from there. And that makes a really good investment, in my opinion. And especially since we've had a good market the last several years, it makes it conducive to do that.
Right. And now, why is 2 years important?
Taxes. Capital Sorry. Gain.
I caught on gain. That. She's like, 2 to 5 years. And I'm like, oh, I know why this. So if you own your home less than 2 years, then you have to pay capital gains tax.
Potentially, yes.
Potentially. But mm-hmm. if you own it longer than 2 years, you have to live in it. I mean, there's some other rules around that. So again, this is not tax advice. We're not telling you exactly how to do this. But and if you want to look up, you know, the capital gains tax and stuff on rent on owning your own home, because I know there's some stuff around it, too. And again, I'm not mm-hmm. pretending that I know it all. But it was interesting that you said, oh, 2 to 5 years. And I'm mm-hmm. like, yep, that 2 year mark's kind of that magic number, right? Like, if you own it longer than that and sell it, then the gains you get to take with you, and it's not taxable up to a certain threshold, I believe.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there's, like I said, there's some rules around it. Look it up. You can Google it really easily, but 2 years is kind of the minimum. And yet 2 years goes by so fast. I mean, I think about it. We bought our home in 2012, and that, I mean, I can't believe we've been there 8 years already. Like, it just, it's amazing, right?
It flies by.
Oh, my goodness, does it. So, oh, those things are fascinating. So 3-bedroom, 2-bath is what people are kind of looking for. By the way, if you have a home you want to sell, you can get a hold of Tracy at
541-595-TEAM.
Oh, there you go. That makes it easy. Okay, yes. What about if they have a dumb phone?
It's 595-8326.
There you go. It used to be, it's easy if you're actually on like a normal phone.
Right.
But like, I remember when I used to have Blackberries and stuff like that. And I'm like, okay, that doesn't help me at all because no. I have to find the actual numbers. What is the actual number? But your office is located downtown.
Yes.
In fact, you have a new to you office.
We do.
So, which used to be the old, what
bank? We're right next to the Wells Fargo Bank, attached to the Wells Fargo Bank, a part of that building. It used to be a Smith Barney investment firm is what I understand it was most recently. But it's been vacant for several years at least.
And it's on Jackson, right?
Yeah, we're right on the corner of Cass and Jackson.
And it's a beautiful brick building. I mean, it's a nice little location. And I saw that you guys just put a new sign up.
We did. We're going all out.
I love it. But so it's interesting that you have a brick and mortar building, considering that the whole thing about eXp is to not have a brick and mortar building.
Yes.
So why did the G team think that that was something that was important?
Well, we just wanted to go against the flow. No.
You go with what you know, right? I need an office to go to. I can't work from home in my pajamas.
Yes. So the G team definitely would be in alignment with real estate is moving to a cloud platform.
You know, that's a very interesting thing. I want to talk about that more, but we're going to take a break really quick. So, again, this is Katie Shook,
Heather Mock,
Tracy Grubbs,
and you're listening to True Wealth Radio Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. I still want a jingle. I'm gonna have to sing a jingle one day. It's going to be horrible, but you guys are going to love it because it's going to be me singing, preferably on a day that I don't sound froggy. But you have Katie Shook in studio with
Heather Mock
and
Tracy Grubbs.
And you get the all-female financial show. We are talking real estate today. So Tracy Grubbs is our pro. Heather as our current shopper. Me just giving my little 2 cents of knowledge I have in there. So, and you guys sound like you were having an interesting conversation off radio. And I missed it because I stepped out for a minute. So, Miss Heather, what questions were you asking Tracy?
I'm constantly told to be prepared for the unexpected costs. So I'm still in the mindset of I still need to save, I still need to save. I don't know what's going to pop up. But I feel like my lender has done great with explaining everything to me. So I'm wondering if there's still going to be those unexpected costs that pop up.
So what, Tracy, I mean, what would be an example of, I guess, unexpected costs that maybe Heather is referring to?
Well, prior to the last few years, lenders were not required to disclose to you specifically what your fees were for buying the loan, getting the loan for the property. We have truth in lending disclosure now that makes lenders disclose to you upfront and before you purchase a property exactly what your fees are going to be. And if they're outside of that at the end of closing, there is a penalty to them. So if you're working with a good lender, they're going to be disclosing to you right away upfront in their good faith estimate how much their fees are, how much money you will need to bring in at closing, what your rates are, etc.
There you go. And I think that move is going towards most financial industries, right? Like everybody's going more and more transparent, as we talk about. And we've talked about even our office. Our office is very transparent, which I think sometimes scares investors a little bit, right? It's like they know it exists, but, you know, in our need to know more, sometimes I feel like more is just more. Like, I'm happy kind of not knowing. Like, I just want to know that it's working. I want to know that everything's going in the right direction. But I don't need to see everything. I mean, I kind of feel like that on social media, right? Like, I don't need to know that you've had a bathroom break today and all 5 meals that you've eaten. Like, that's just too much information. Like, I'm good with the pictures of the cats and the kids. Other than that, like, TMI a little bit. I wish there was, like, a TMI button on Facebook, right? Like, TMI. Can I flag that as TMI? Because I don't really care. But Truth in Lending, that's awesome that they're trying to help the buyer out a little bit more. And so, again, working with a realtor, those are things that are important because there's constant regulation change. Like, I know in our financial industry, there's constantly changes, whether it's contribution limits, the Secure Act, which just came out. And the only reason I even have that one memorized is because it came out on my birthday. Thank you, government. And so, but there's constantly changes. And so having somebody who's in it day in and day out and who knows all those changes, because if it's been 5 or 10 years since you've last purchased a home, guess what? Things are different. And I remember, like, I got my real estate license in 2000. I'm trying to think of exactly when I got it. And sold alongside my mom for a while because my mom had sold real estate my whole entire life. And I remember when I started the contracts, they were like 7 pages long. And they are not 7 pages long anymore.
No.
Like, they're super crazy thick. Like, there's so much. And again, a lot of it has to do with regulation, right? It's all the different laws. And a lot of it is to protect the buyer. It's to protect the consumer. But it doesn't, I mean, I couldn't look at a contract right now and tell you all the updates that real estate's made in the last 20 years. There's no way, because I haven't stayed up on that knowledge. And so that's where I think a realtor is super valuable, right? They know all the ins and outs, and they know how to navigate the system. They know what to focus on and what not to focus on, and just kind of help get you the best deal. And you guys get to go negotiate kind of on our behalf, too, as well as a purchaser.
Correct.
So that's something that's awesome. Now, before we left to the break, we were talking about cloud-based real estate. And as online becomes more and more popular, right, which, I mean, let's admit it, like, two-year-olds now are going online very easily. It's amazing how early babies can figure out how to swipe and open an iPhone. Like, when did that become part of our genetics? Because yes. I think you and I are pretty close in age, and we kind of grew up in the generation where it's like, I still remember pagers. Like, I had a pager. You probably never had a pager.
I touched one.
Yeah, yeah, in a museum. Okay, so, I mean, I remember having pagers, right? And that was, like, the big thing. Oh, just beep me. And then I remember getting cell phones and having a flip phone. And I was in my teens about when that kind of came out and that became really popular, having a cell phone. And I remember having a BlackBerry and all the communication. And it's amazing how far it's come, all the different apps you can have on your phone now. And Heather, you admit talked about like realtor.com and you talked about Zillow. Where else are people getting their information from? Are there other websites that you're on or like, that you personally advertise on or that you have your clients go to when they're looking at things?
Well, realtor.com is probably the best in a general national website for good information.
Okay.
It is realtor based, so you're going to get a lot better information there. Zillow is still a big one. And there's also Trulia and other sites, Redfin, et cetera. But ultimately, those sites give you a lot of information, but you need to rely on your realtor to give you accurate information about a specific property. Just as Heather was mentioning, she looks at a property on Zillow, but then references that property to her realtor so that they can tell her what the true information is.
They always give me a big list of what was wrong with it and why I can't get it.
Exactly.
Well, and by the way, that's a buyer beware, right? Yes. Like why you shouldn't maybe purchase it. Yes. Maybe that's the bigger takeaway on that one. But brought up an interesting point that you kind of skimmed over really quickly. So realtor.com, the information's fed by realtors, right? You have to put it in the MLS, right? The multiple listing service. And so if you are a for sale by owner, your house is not listed necessarily on realtor.com because you don't have a realtor putting it into that multiple listing system.
Correct.
So you are not getting all the eyes of the millions of viewers that are on realtor.com all the time.
Yes.
All right. Well, there you have it, folks. So it pays to work with a realtor. What other things? So let's talk about trends in the market a little bit. So you talked about like a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. That seems to be kind of the most popular home being purchased right now. Is there other things that people are looking for?
Multifamily.
Interesting. Okay. Like, so what specifically are they looking for? Like a second dwelling on the property or just more bedrooms?
So quite a broad range, really. I have clients looking for duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes. Even apartments are in high demand. Even families who want to cohabitate together on the same property and find something that has more than one home on it or the ability to place more than one home on it.
So that is something that's fascinating to me because you can have a lot of acreage, but you may not have the ability to put more than one dwelling.
That's correct.
So those are definitely things to look into if that is your dream. So oddly enough, it's always been kind of my dream to have like the family cul-de-sac, right? Because then you can only have one pool and one basketball court and you don't all have to do it, but the kids can all run across. That's why when you get angry, you can go to grandma's. And then you can just kick them out the door and they can run across the street and you're not worried about them getting hit by a car because you own the whole neighborhood. So I always kind of thought it would be really cool to have that. I don't think I can convince my brother to move up to Oregon just yet, but I always thought it would be fun. So multifamily, now multifamily means something, I think, a little different up here than it did in Southern California, because I know when I lived down there, you saw a lot of new home builders putting in like 5-to-8-bedroom homes where the house itself was very large, but the yard was very small for that reason, right? Because it's like grandma and grandpa lived with us and maybe an aunt and uncle or cousins. Like you said, multifamily, right? Even multi-generational. People were living together. And so that was definitely a building trend. But I don't see that as much necessarily around here.
No, that scenario definitely isn't as popular. When you have a home that large, it's definitely marketing to a large family, someone with a lot of kids, or multi-generational. But they also need a yard. So if that large property doesn't have a yard, it can be truly hard to sell.
Interesting.
Yes. So the home might be gigantic, but if there's nowhere for the kids to play, it can actually be difficult to move.
So this is my little thing to builders. So if you're a builder and you're listening to the show, just put in an extra bedroom. I don't think anybody has ever said, oh no, 5 bedrooms was too many. I wish I would have bought a 4-bedroom house. Like every person I talk to always says, I wish I would have had one extra bedroom for something, whether it was a guest room, a craft room, a home office. But it always seems like bedrooms, like there's never enough. It's not even bathrooms either. I think the bathrooms you can kind of get over. But having that extra bedroom, right? Always seems like that's in high demand. And I'm always amazed when homes are really big square footage wise, you know, like 4,000, 5,000 square feet, and it's a 3-bedroom home. I'm like, why? Why? Like, why did you do that? Just stick up another wall, make another bedroom.
Yes.
Like I said, I mean, have you ever heard anybody say, oh, I had too many bedrooms, I had to downsize?
Well, retirees, yes, I've heard them say that.
Too many bedrooms or too much house to take care of?
Too much house. Too much house.
Too much house to take care of is definitely a thing, right? The kitchen becomes too big, or a lot of times it's the yard, right? Too much property to take care of. It's not necessarily the house, but too much property. Or if there's stairs, sometimes, you know, if they had a 2-story and they're getting a little bit older, sometimes it helps to have more of a ranch style or just a single level family home for sure.
Definitely.
Because let me tell you, yard work hurts my body. Like, I get it. I'm not old. I'm 40. I understand. But I know when I've worked out in the yard all day, because my body is screaming the next day. I'm like, man, I haven't used those muscles in a little while, which is just a reminder to get into the gym. But so having enough property, like you said, people with little kids are looking for more property to play. People that are retiring or wanting to travel more, maybe downsizing into smaller property. Maybe it's the family home and, you know, the kids are gone now and they've gone to college or they've, you know, grown up and are married and moved on or whatever it may be. And, you know, now you have this big house that they just don't want to manage any longer.
Yes.
So lots of transitions. I've noticed me personally that I don't see anybody as much. I shouldn't say anybody, but as much sticking with the family home. Like, you don't see the homes necessarily being passed from generation to generation anymore and like they used to.
No.
So
they're definitely being used more so as financial leverage to get into something else or to pull money out for another kind of investment, rather than being held long term.
That's kind of what I'm saying too. So it's nice to have the pro back me up on that one. All right, you guys, we're coming up on our break. So we're going to take one last break and then we're going to wrap up this all-female financial show. And you have Katie Shook and
Heather Mock
and Tracy Grubbs.
All right. And you're listening to the True Wealth Radio Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Welcome back, folks. This is Katie Shook. I'm in studio today taking over for Mr. David Littlejohn. He is not here. Next week I will let him tell you all about his adventures. But I decided to do the all-female financial show. So I brought in Heather Mock, who is new to our LJFS team, and Tracy Grubbs, our realtor pro here in the area with the G team with eXp Realty. And we're talking a little bit about, well, we're talking a lot of it about real estate. We're just talking about the ins and outs of real estate, the trends that you've seen. By the way, we at Littlejohn Financial Services believe in an holistic approach to your finances, right? It's not just about the money you have invested with us, but about how money flows. Sometimes it'll throw you a curveball, but how money flows through your life. And real estate is part of that, right? Like, we believe in having rental properties. We believe in Dave Ramsey and the baby steps, you know, and we call them adulting steps. And some of the adulting steps, we talk about passive income. And part of passive income is having rental properties, right? And having your money work for you instead of having you work for your money. So it's going from a paycheck to a paycheck, which I love that phrase. I want to work for a paycheck, right? I want to go to work because I want to, not because I have to. Although David and I always argue about who's going to retire first. He says he has to leave first. I can't leave first. I told him there's going to get to be a point where we'll just give him an office and then have him not show up. But that's a long way away. We need you, David, right now. And we hope you're having fun where you're at. All right. So, Tracy, we're talking about real estate today. Heather's had some good questions. So, Heather, what was your next question?
Well, when I decided to start looking to buy a house, I was worried on what it was going to cost me to actually use a realtor. But then I was relieved to find out when you're buying, it actually doesn't cost you anything to use the realtor because it comes from the seller selling the house. So that was kind of a relief to know that I didn't have to save up even more to pay somebody to help me find a house.
Because you were worried about saving for the down payment and the closing costs. Yes. And everything else. All right. So, Tracy, do you want to talk a little bit about how you get paid, I guess, in the transaction?
Yes. So when a property is listed, that agent negotiates the overall commission with that client and is then indicated to a buyer's agent in the MLS listing what their portion of the commission will be. And so fortunately, as a buyer, you can employ the services of a realtor and not be financially obligated to pay that realtor for their services. And the seller does cover the commission for both the listing and selling agents in a transaction, which I think is a fantastic perk for buyers.
It is. And I mean, if, like you said, Heather, if you had to come up with more money to pay the realtor, that may really hinder the real estate market, right? So the buyer has said, okay, I'm going to agree to pay my agent to help advertise my house and get me the best price possible. And I'll pay other people to bring buyers to me, right? That's, I mean, in essence, what they're doing. Now, if I remember right, the industry standard is about 6% total. Does that sound about right still? Or is that kind of...
For our area, yes. That
okay.
Is,
so
that
it's
is
about
standard.
3% to each, right? 3% to the selling and 3% to the buyer's agent. Now, agents can double end them, which means they can go find the buyer for their listing.
They can.
And get paid both sides of the commission. Sometimes I think that would be hard being in the middle of a buyer and a seller. Like, how do you make sure to represent both fairly?
Yes, good question. So in Oregon, they do allow dual agency is what that is called. It's something that can be done easily. Particularly, you need to be sure to represent both parties honestly and in good faith, and obviously disclose any material items that you would know about a property to a prospective buyer if you're representing the seller. Essentially, it's an easy process for someone who is fluid with how they operate and how they represent their clients.
I would think being honest and forthright as a moral and as a character would make that much easier in that transaction, because then your buyer and your seller wouldn't feel like, oh, they're hiding something from me, because you've already won their trust, right?
Yes.
You've already been very honest from the very beginning and kind of done that. Yeah. In the last few minutes of the show, I want Tracy to share some fun and interesting stories about real estate. So do you have anything wacky you've come across or these, like, that moment where you go home and you want to sit there and tell your husband, like, man, you should have been with me today and seen this weird thing that happened?
Well, I wish that I had kept a diary or a log of all the different things that have happened because I've forgotten about a lot of them over the years. One that really stands out in my memory was when I was a pretty new agent. I think I'd only been licensed a year or two. I was hosting an open house here in the Roseburg area downtown for a client, a listing of mine. And I had someone attend my open house, come through and act very strangely during the whole visit. Would jump at any sound and just was really nervous. And I couldn't quite figure out what was happening. They eventually left, or I thought they left, and I waited for the next guest to arrive, and the person ended up coming back up to the house and decided that she should tell me that she used to rent the property and that it was haunted. Yes.
So were the ghosts tickling her as she was walking through the house?
I don't know. And I never experienced anything out of the norm in that home, but I just, as a new agent, it was pretty alarming to have someone come in and tell me something like that. But we've had so many other things happen. I mean, I've shown a home that had a live sink.
So, Tracy, we are out of time today, but haunted houses. All right. So if you want more story about haunted houses, contact Tracy Grubbs at
541-595-TEAM.
All right, ladies and folks and gentlemen and everybody else listening, thank you so much for listening to the True Wealth Radio Show.
The preceding program was paid for by Little John Financial Services.